Thank you, Gia. Appreciate that. Okay, now I can speak. Yes. Okay, where was I? All righty. So today we're talking about bliss. And, you know, I was thinking as I was preparing this talk, I think we're really unique in this teaching and other metaphysical teachings in that we believe that bliss is possible even if things are falling apart. Am I right about that? I mean, the fact that we're unique, you may not believe that bliss is possible even if things are falling apart, but this teaching definitely believes that, and I'm not sure that other teachings feel that way, but I could be wrong. I don't know. I don't know everything about every spiritual path, but definitely in this teaching, we say that bliss is possible. Bliss is possible, and like the reading that Hugh did that was so eloquent, it really is an inside job. The mistake that we often make is looking for external things to be fixed or better, and then we can have bliss, but really it's an internal state of mind. And that's a good thing because the world is pretty kooky right now, isn't it? You know, it's weird to go to church and see, you know, 12% of the seating capacity here wearing masks. Some of all y'all waved at me. I have no idea who you were, but I said hello anyway, so... Not very good at seeing, at recognizing people under the best circumstances. But, you know, it's that and the racial tension that's going on and the economic crisis that is happening or inevitable, maybe. We don't really know what's going to happen. But there's been a lot of tension and a lot of unrest, a lot of uncertainty, a lot of having to cope with impermanence, and still... we have the capacity for bliss within each of us. Things can get really bad. Things can get horrible, and we can still find bliss. This week I was reminded of a story that I read a long time ago. This was from the Noble Purpose work, and Karen Mondragon actually shared it with me because she is Reverend Karen Mondragon is a Noble Purpose teacher. And it's a story about a young boy, his name was Isaiah, and it was during World War II, and he was in a concentration camp. And he was in Auschwitz, actually, and his sister and his father and his mother had all succumbed to the cruelty of the Nazis. They hadn't been gassed, but they had been starved. And every day he was offended and beat and ridiculed by the Nazi guard, this one particular guard who made it his mission to torture this poor young boy. He was probably about 12 years old. And as time went on, as the winter got colder and the days got shorter and life got darker, life for him got very dark. And he was wondering, is this the meaning of life? Is this the purpose of life? Is it that we're supposed to suffer relentlessly, or is there something more? And it wasn't like him to pray. He was young, but he started praying to God, please, God, show me, is there something more to life? Is there something more? And then it took a long time. Several months later, he woke up, and he had an image of his home where he was from prior to the war, with the garden and the cat and his loving family. And he thought about how wonderful that was, and he thought about how he felt. And all of a sudden, the answer came to him. He said, I choose love. I choose love, no matter what. He might have said, I choose bliss, no matter what. And shortly after he had that thought, that Nazi guard came out of the place where he was staying, and Isaiah looked at him, and he saw not an enemy, but he saw a man that was tortured inside, a man that was filled with such pain that he had to take it out on others. And that changed his perspective. He said every day since that time, if nothing good was happening, he would simply look at the light, because this light infused him, this light of the truth of love and bliss infused him, and that was his guidepost from that day forward. The story was actually taken from a writing by Paul Harvey, who's a modern metaphysical teacher. He's getting up there in years now, but he's somewhat a modern metaphysical teacher. And he talked about meeting Isaiah as an older man. It is a true story. And one of the things that Isaiah said to him as they went their separate ways is bliss is eternal. Bliss is an eternal state of being. And I would say also that bliss is not only eternal, bliss is essential, meaning essential in its importance, but also essential in that it is our essence. And that's why I think, because bliss is our essence, I think that's why we can turn to bliss at any time if we're looking within and see what we can do to find it. I want to talk a little bit about what bliss is. I think there's a certain confusion about bliss. Because I thought I might be confused, I turned to the wisdom of Deepak Chopra, and I looked at an article that he had written for the San Francisco Chronicle that was about bliss. He wrote it probably, I think, 2 years ago, and 3 years ago, 2017. And in this article, he said, yes, Joseph Campbell, wonderful writer that many of you, I'm sure, are familiar with, Joseph Campbell coined the phrase that we have to follow our bliss. Am I getting that right? Follow your bliss, right? And Deepak was all for that, but he said, sometimes people don't really understand what bliss is. They think that bliss is simply about feeling good or doing what you like. Some of us might think that bliss is indulging certain things that really feel good at the time, but maybe are not the best thing for you. Has anyone done that? Show of pinkies. Oh, some people are raising their hands. Wow, okay, two hands up. Two hands and a foot. Here we go. Yeah. You know, this quarantine has brought out the best in a lot of us, but certain other things. Reverend Judy Pando told me the other day, we were doing a delivery to a congregant, and she said that after the quarantine, everybody's either going to be a hunk, right, from lifting weights, a drunk, or a chunk. I'm working on the last one. But not, it's not too bad. But anyway, so bliss is not that. Bliss is not indulging in something that in the long run is not necessarily going to make us happy. You know, I think the Dalai Lama really did a great job of distinguishing that happiness is not necessarily pleasure. Happiness is not immediate gratification. It sure feels good at the time. Don't deny that. But it is not lasting happiness or lasting bliss. Bliss is something totally different. Bliss is otherworldly. You know, because bliss is something that many mystics have spoken about, and because it is otherworldly, I also turn to the wisdom of one of my favorite spiritual teachers, which is Rupert Spira, who is up there, by the way. He's the guy who's pointing at us next to Nipun Mehta and Ernest Holmes in the white shirt. He looks very real, doesn't he? Very three-dimensional. He's kind of, I'm a little afraid of him, actually. But yeah, he looks serious about something. Maybe he's serious about bliss. I hope so, because bliss is very important. But, you know, he talked about the word Satchitananda, which is Sanskrit, and a lot of us are familiar with that word, Satchitananda. It's normally translated as existence, consciousness, and bliss. But Rupert, similar to Deepak, is challenged a bit by the word bliss. So he says that Sat is being, which is like existence. Chit is existence or knowing, chit is consciousness or knowing, right? And ananda is bliss or peace. And he says the ultimate source and impetus of creation is being knowing its state of bliss or peace. This is what we were here to do. We are here to know peace. We are here to reunite with the One. We are homesick for wholeness, and it's time for us to go home, no matter what is going on in the world, and reunite with that sense that sense of being and that sense of belonging to something that is greater than the small self. And that something is bliss. That something is existence. That something is consciousness. You know, when you start thinking of all three, it creates one of those law of three, holy trinity type things that just one feeds the other, that existence is, that consciousness created existence, and it's all fueled by this energy of bliss that is so real and so true and so powerful. And so often, true bliss is overlooked in the spirit of indulgence, in the spirit of just what feels good in the moment. So Deepak went further with that, and he suggested that there are three stages of bliss. The first stage is the one that I'm talking about, that I've talked about already, the stage where it, you know, it can be something that's good for you, something that you enjoy. It can be something that it's indulgent. It's just something that feels good in the moment, and you are seeking bliss in some type of material thing or some person outside of you. But then he said in the second stage of finding bliss, it's much less about material conditions and it's much more about inner conditions. It's understanding that you do not have bliss or you do not seek bliss, that bliss has you and bliss is seeking you. It reminds me very much of the Esther Hicks teachings, Abraham and Esther Hicks, where she says, your well-being is tracking you. What if your bliss is looking for you? What if your bliss, the miracle of bliss that you are seeking is already seeking you, and it's a matter of just opening up the doors of our consciousness to let it in? What if that's true? Do you think it's true? I don't know. No. I think it's true. I believe it. I believe it with my whole heart because I think many of us have lived it. And then, you know, the third phase of bliss is that bliss becomes your default mechanism. No matter what happens, it brings you to bliss. Now, this seems really challenging. In fact, it may seem insulting to some in that something really awful happens and you want to rest in the awfulness of it, which is not a bad thing. Or something in the world happens and you want to recognize that there is injustice or that there is unrest or that there is something that needs to be changed, which is also not a bad thing. But underneath it, there is this purr, like how a cat purrs, you know, there's this purring of bliss that knows that if something challenging happens, if suffering happens, that it is a grand entry point for compassion. Certainly, many of us have learned that through the loss of loved ones, or through the loss of various states of being that we've been connected to or attached to, in that great loss is absolutely the same as great love. And so when something terrible happens in the world, or when something terrible happens in your life, yes, honor the feeling, honor what is going on, but also know that there is room for bliss there too. There is bliss in actually honoring your feelings. There is bliss in recognizing what is going on, and yet choosing to see the higher road, choosing to see the bigger picture, choosing to be open to the possibility that, yes, bliss is here too. Well, I'm going to go home and do that right now. No, not not really. So how do you like make that happen? How do you change your consciousness to be receptive to the bliss that is in all things, even in things that are really bad? I think there's many ways. Certainly it takes practice and training. I think community helps as we lift each other up into a different way of looking at the world. You know, Joel Goldsmith writes, though, that you can write about water, you can read about water, but unless you drink the water, you're still thirsty. And that's why we have community. That's why we have a world. That's why we have a material world, so that we can really, really experience bliss rather than just knowing about it from an intellectual level. You know, the world exists so that we can experience the becoming of ourselves, our return back to the oneness that we really are. And honestly, another way to be blissful in really challenging situations, whether it's personally challenging or whether it's globally challenging, is to understand that this is for our becoming. This is for our awakening. This is for our enhanced receptivity to bliss. Because, you know, we talk about unconditional love or unconditional bliss. It wouldn't have any meaning if bliss did not have to overcome conditions, if bliss could not transcend conditions. Unconditional love doesn't mean anything unless there are people around you that work your last nerve, you know? Anybody have someone like that in your life? Show of pinkies again, please. Oh, somebody raised two hands. Wow. Okay. I'm looking for two hands and a foot. Anybody? No. Okay, we don't have to. So I think, yes, it's the understanding that so, you know, so often in this teaching we think that if something difficult happens, it means that we've done something wrong, and I don't think that that's true. It could be true in some cases. If you're going to act like a jerk, then people will probably treat you badly. But if something is coming up where you can't seem to find the bliss, then that is your challenge. That is your calling. That's like doing a jigsaw puzzle. It's too hard for you, right? You trust something bigger, and you trust that that bliss is there, that a solution is there, and that it will come to us if we simply open our minds and open our hearts to receive it. We have to believe in the possibility of bliss in all things, not just the things we like. Speaking of jigsaw puzzles, how many of you have succumbed to the urge to do jigsaw puzzles in this quarantine? Anybody? Yes. Well, not that many people. Okay. Yeah. I made the mistake of purchasing a jigsaw puzzle for one of our congregants that was recovering from surgery, and now I'm a complete addict. It's really a shame. It's really a shame. And then my husband, Hugh, decided to buy me the hardest puzzle ever. And I'll tell you why it was hard if you're interested. Are you interested as to why it was hard? Okay, good. It was not a square, was it? No. It had an outline that went like that. So it was super hard to figure out what went where, and the pieces were tiny. And it was a bunch of animals. I said, get me one with an animal. And all their fur looked alike. Is that racist? I hope not. All their fur looked alike. And profiling. Back up, Bon, be careful. So as I was doing the puzzle, though, because of what we teach in this teaching, because everything becomes a metaphor, the more you do this teaching, the more you get engaged in this church, the more you get engaged in metaphysical philosophy, your whole life becomes a metaphor for something. And I was looking at what a metaphor, a puzzle is for life, and in particular, because I was thinking about this topic, what it is, what a metaphor it is for finding bliss. You know, it's very much like Rabia looking outside because the light was there. When you do a jigsaw puzzle, there's a space that needs to be filled. And you look and you look and you look at all the pieces, and it doesn't exist. You say it must not exist. The cat must have taken it. The dog took it. It got eaten by the rabbit. I'm sure you all say that at home, don't you? Yes. And then one day, for whatever reason, you have clarity of insight and you see the peace, and it was there all along. That is true about bliss. It's there all along. We just can't see it sometimes if we're too caught up in something else. If we're too caught up, perhaps, in the tension of not being able to find it and affirming over and over and over again, this peace just doesn't exist. This bliss just doesn't exist. And then there's my other favorite puzzle metaphor, which is when there's a spot and you see the color and you know that this piece over here goes in there and it doesn't. So you put it back and you look and you look and you look and you say, you know, maybe I was wrong about that piece. This piece over here goes in there and it still doesn't. And you do that 3 or 4 times, and at one point you're thinking about getting a hammer and just hammering it in because you feel like it should go in there. It seems to be the right piece, right? And that's again the metaphor of saying, this is where I'm finding bliss. I am attached to this piece going there. I am attached to this person. I am attached to this job. I am attached to this condition. I am attached to this state of the world. And if only I could beat it into submission, that would give me bliss. No. No, 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 1,000 times no. Again, it's not dependency on your opinion of the way things should be. It's a complex and complete and actually quite simple, really, when you get down to it, of turning to the higher will, the will of the puzzle, the will of the puzzle known as the universe, and allowing that to be your guide, allowing that to complete the puzzle of where is my bliss, allowing that to complete the longing for wholeness that we all have within us, but it may not necessarily be your idea. It may be the design of the divine, the bigger picture, the bigger puzzle, because life is a puzzle, isn't it? Life is a puzzle, and it can be a joyful puzzle that you do for fun, or it can be a treacherous puzzle that is arduous and horrible. I go more for the joyful puzzle that you do for fun, and that everything that comes up is an opportunity to have a sense of humor about it and a sense of joy, knowing that there is joy underneath the surface and that there is bliss waiting to happen if we just relax and let it go and let it in. So what does that relaxing and letting in look like? Well, once again on Facebook, I asked the question, how do you sustain bliss in your life? What do you do to manage bliss? And I'm going to ask my lovely assistant, Chris Kimbler, and I'm going to pick out three responses from our congregation. Chris is quickly getting the socially distanced basket. I just love this thing so much. Thank you. And I'm going to pick out three responses as to how people in our congregation allow bliss to come in. Ooh. Debbie creates new ways to connect with friends and family. You see how that is? Creative. Creative, coming from within. She's creating new ways of connecting with friends and family. She's not saying, I'm only happy when my family's reaching out to me, right? She's creating new ways. Let's see who this person is. Bill is doing his morning meditations. That's a beautiful way to connect to bliss as well, turning within, like Rabia, turning within. And then this one, let's see what this one is. Nick does volunteer work, charity, and sponsorship. Beautiful. Again, that's being an active vessel for bliss by taking action and taking responsibility for our inner state. Other things you can do. You know, one of the things that Joel Goldsmith suggests in terms of bliss is to just check in with the divine every single day. Joel Goldsmith is very much hardcore, non-dual, religious science, or he's not really religious science, but the infinite way at its best, where he says, in the realm of spirit, there is no separation between good and evil. There is a good beyond good that surrounds everything. And he asks us to connect to that every day and say, call it bliss, call it love, call it whatever you want to call it good beyond good, and say, what would you have me do today? Let me be a transparency for you today. And can you imagine what life would be like if we just decided first thing every morning, today I will be a transparency for bliss. I will be a vessel for bliss, and I will allow it to pour out of me. You know, the one that Brother Nick said about charity and volunteering and sponsorship, that is allowing bliss to pour out of us. One of the things that I learned early on after suffering a great deal was, if I wanted to be happy and the people around me were not doing enough to make me happy, I worked on helping other people feel happy. And it's so funny, because happiness feels the same. Praise, happiness, giving, receiving, it feels the same whether it's coming or going. That's a key to bliss as well. And then another thing is the change me prayer. You know, for the whole first 3 months or so of this year, before everything went cuckoo, right? We were talking about change me prayers, where we pray the divine beloved, change me into someone that is receptive to bliss. Divine beloved, change me into someone that can share bliss freely. Divine beloved, help me see the bliss in everything. Divine beloved, help me know the reality of bliss that is the substance of this universe. Sat Chit Ananda, existence, consciousness, and bliss. This is who I am. This is what we are. This is life. This is love. This is existence. What if you were to do that every day? What if we were to do that every day? You think things would change? I don't know if things would change on the outside, but certainly on the inside. We'd be looking for opportunities to serve. We'd be looking for challenging things to happen, to say, wow, I wonder if I can feel bliss in this too. Now there's a thought. And then another thing, one more thing that I want to talk about, a way to cultivate bliss. This one came to me recently. I've been playing with this this thought recently, but it's not new. You know, if you or somebody else is continuing to repeat the same tale of woe over and over again, let's talk about it inwardly. Let's say I am saying the same tale of woe over and over again, trying to convince myself how bad it is or how bad I am. What if we were just to change the subject? I've done that with people in my life. I've done that with people in my life that are complaining and complaining and complaining. And if I can find a place of affection and just change the subject into something, oh my goodness, their whole being changes. You know, I know you're really upset about that, but do you want to hear what my cat did? I know you like cats. Is that crazy? You know what? It's not that crazy because I have spiritual principle to back this up. The Golden Key. Who wrote The Golden Key? Emmett Fox. Oh, David, the ATM, has spoken. Thank you. Emmett Fox wrote The Golden Key, and he says, whenever you're troubled about anything, change the subject. Think about God. And I'm suggesting that whenever somebody is troubling you, or whenever you're troubled by someone or troubled by your own voice, not all the time. Sometimes you can have a reasonable conversation about it, but if you've heard the same thing in your head or in somebody else's head 40, 50 times, maybe try changing the subject, thinking about God instead. The Golden Key, this book by Emmett Fox, is a 6-page booklet. And in this booklet, Emmett Fox says that this is all you need, dude. This is all you need. You need these 6 pages, and probably you only need one sentence. Think about God. Think about love. Think about bliss. Because our thoughts shape our lives and our actions and our habits. And we are here to, in this teaching, to adjust our thoughts and to open ourselves up to God's thought, to love's thought, to the thought of bliss. There's one more thing that I want to close with. You know, I've kind of been using in this talk the idea of bliss and love as synonymous, as the same thing. And I know some of you are familiar with Matt Kahn. He wrote a book called Whatever Arises, Love That. And there's a famous reading that I've done several times using the word love, where it's, no matter what I do, I deserve more love, not less. I'm going to change that to bliss and close with this reading. When I'm sad, I deserve more bliss, not less. When I'm angry, I deserve more bliss, not less. When I'm frustrated, I deserve more bliss, not less. Whenever I'm hurt, heartbroken, ashamed, or feeling guilty, I deserve more bliss, not less. Even when I'm embarrassed by my actions, I deserve more bliss, not less. Equally so, when I'm proud of myself, I deserve more bliss, not less. No matter how I feel, I deserve more bliss, not less. Despite what I think, I deserve more bliss, not less. No matter the past I've survived, I deserve more bliss, not less. No matter what remains up ahead, I deserve more bliss, not less. On my worst day, I deserve more bliss, not less. When life seems cruel and confusing, I deserve more bliss, not less. When no one is here to give me what I need, I deserve more bliss, not less. In remembering the greatest way I can serve the world, I deserve more bliss, not less. No matter what, I'm able to accept whomever I cannot forgive, or whatever I'm unable to love for whatever reason, I deserve more bliss, not less. And again, the source of bliss is not changing others. The source of bliss is not changing the world. That's like looking for a needle outside when you know you've dropped it inside. The source of bliss is always going within and asking the divine, asking the Holy Spirit, asking the Shakti energy, and asking whatever you relate to, asking bliss itself to infuse you and fill your heart, because truly, you all, we all deserve more bliss, not less. Let us pray.